At Market District, we believe in the power of great taste, like juicy heirloom tomatoes, cheesy house-made pizza, and fresh artisan-made bread. From produce to meats to chef-made meals, discover great taste at Market District.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Second hour, Darren, Donick, and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game on this Tuesday morning. Hope everybody's having a good day to this point as I get choked up. Wow.
Yeah,
that
right there,
that came out of nowhere. Excuse me for that. Wow. I don't know why I got choked up. All I said was we're coming into the second hour. But we always enjoy our conversations as I fumble and bumble around here on this Tuesday to catch up with Chris Lowe from ESPN, and he now joins us. Chris, how you doing?
I'm doing great, guys. It's good to be with you.
Yeah, good to be with you. I know it's been a while since we talked, and, man, it was a tough week in the conference to lose two legendary coaches like Pat Dye and Johnny Majors.
Yeah, and from an era when you go back to the 70s and the 80s, really on into the 90s, and you think about the lineup of coaches in the SEC, just iconic coaches. You go all the way back to Coach Bryant, Pat Dye, Johnny Majors, I mean, on and on and on, the two guys that were in their own way larger than life. And really just when you think of SEC football and you think of coaches and guys leading programs in the SEC, I mean, you think of guys like Pat Dye and John Majors. I mean, both those guys took their programs to championships, conference championships, and really, you talk to the folks on the plains, and Pat Dye arrived there at a time when they really desperately needed leadership. They needed somebody to come in and really sort of show them the way, strong, tough-minded leadership, and Coach Dye gave them that. And in John Major's case, he comes back to his alma mater in 77 at a time where he was just coming off a national championship. And, those of us, I shouldn't say us, but those that maybe are a little younger and don't remember, he came to Tennessee at a time when Tennessee needed him. He had the talent at Pitt to win maybe another championship or two and rebuilt the Tennessee program to being a nationally elite program and won three SEC titles. And, from somebody who went to school at Tennessee, my dad went to school at Tennessee, and I didn't grow up in the state. My son, middle son's there now. It's hard for me to separate the Major's name and Tennessee, period. I don't care if you're talking about the University of Tennessee, the state of Tennessee, but what that name's meant to the entire state.
Well, we thought of you. We were thinking, last week we had, unfortunately, when the sad news came up the very next day on the show, we had Jimmy Himes on from Knoxville WNML there, and he had some great stories for Johnny Majors. And you were another guy that we thought about because of your ties to the school and obviously the conference. I know that, you've got your own Johnny Majors stories as well.
Oh, gosh, we'd be here for hours if I told them all. just the best of the best. But, John was, because I always called him Coach, because when I was in school, he was the coach of Tennessee. And even from that point on, I've always called him Coach Majors. Really one of the few in the business that I do that, because most of these guys I've gotten to know when I was in the business. But he, when you start talking about telling John Major stories, it starts with the way he could tell stories. He was a terrific coach. He was probably an even better player. But he was an unbelievable storyteller. He could talk and tell stories about everything, from the symphony to history to football. One of my favorite stories, when I first moved to Knoxville in 97, back to Knoxville, to go to work for the Tennessean, I never lived in Nashville. I always lived in Knoxville before. I didn't have a cell phone, so we had the old home phone recorder. And my wife did not grow up in Tennessee, so I would call Coach Majors about something, and he would call me back. And one of the few things Coach Majors didn't do well is he didn't work his cell phone very well. He didn't know his way around trying to get in and out of cell phone messages. So we would have talked about something, and then maybe he was following up on a message I left him. And he would call me back and leave these long, rambling messages on my home answering machine. And my wife, Julie, would say, Chris, you had a call from a Coach Majors. He left about a two-minute message, and I'd start laughing, and I'd get back. And invariably, he'd be up in D.C. with his grandson, Brandon. He would give me his whole itinerary, every museum they visited. And we went to the Smithsonian Institute, and after that, we went here, and then we went to – like you were there with him, making all the rounds in D.C. And I love that about him, because he would tell you stories and he just would talk. One of the last times, not the last time, guys, that I ran into Coach Majors, I was in New Orleans for a playoff game or semifinal game, and I was touring the World War II Museum with some colleagues from ESPN. I hear this voice behind me, Chris Lowe, and I turn around, Coach Majors by himself, taking in the World War II Museum. Because he's a huge history buff, and he proceeded to tell me everywhere I needed to go in the European chapter, in the Pacific chapter, be sure you spend enough time here and there. And that's what was so awesome about him, is you could sit and talk to Coach Majors for an hour and a half, and football would never come up. You know, and how many football coaches, past and current, can you say that about?
Boy, you just took the words out of my mouth. I was literally getting ready to say that. How many of those people can we name? Not many, right?
He was something else, and he was a treasure. Charles Davis, you know, is great, and I went to school with Charles in the 80s. And he said it. He said Coach Majors was a treasure in every way. And, you know, if you ever had a chance to go to one of the practices back when he would stand up in that tower, and the tower had those spiral steps that would come down to the practice field, he'd see something, and he had that megaphone. You could never understand what he was saying on that megaphone, that loudspeaker. And he'd see something he didn't like. Usually it was the DBs, because the DBs were his baby. He would tell you, I'm the best defensive backs coach in the history of the game. And he'd come sprinting down those spiral stairs, and he'd get to the bottom, he's out of breath, and he'd start sprinting over to that position group. And I tell you what, the players, whoever screwed up, that he saw in practice he didn't like, the player or players who screw up were in trouble. But you know who was in bigger trouble? Their position coach. I mean, he would let them have it.
What made him such a successful coach? I mean, it's one thing to talk, you know, have all these other outside interests, and that's great, especially for the media, because that's just something that's not commonplace when you're talking to a football coach. But why did it work? Why did it translate to on the football field? Obviously, he played the game at a high level. Why was he successful?
Very passionate man about everything he did, everything. And connected and related well to people, was brutally, brutally honest. You know, players at that level, at the highest level, you know, they don't want to be told. You know, maybe when they're younger, you know, when you're recruiting them at 16 or 17, they don't want to be told what they want to hear. They want to be told how you can get better, how you can get to the next level. And Coach Majors was like that. I mean, he was hard on players and coaches. I think he's probably even harder on his coaches. I mean, you go back and look at all the assistants. I mean, his coaching tree, guys, is as good as any coaching tree in college football history. When you look at the people who coached under him, that went on to be head coaches, you know, from Gruden to Fulmer to Cutcliffe, Ron Zook. I mean, you can keep going on and on and on. Jimmy Johnson. If you talk about Iowa State, Pitt, and Tennessee, I mean, it's as good as any. But he just had a way of pushing you and challenging you. Keith DeLong, you know, who was an All-American there in the 80s, linebacker, great player, first-round pick of the Niners, said one of the last times he had lunch with Coach Majors, he said, Coach Majors looked at him. I love the story. And he said, Keith, I wasn't too hard on you, was I? And Keith looked at him and said, Coach, I thank God every day that you were as hard on me as you were, and you pushed me and you challenged me the way you did. Because, yes, it made me a better football player, but it made me an even better man, a better husband, a better father. And I think, to answer your question, that's all you really need to know about Coach Majors.
Chris Lowe is with us, and we are really excited to have his perspective on this today. I can remember talking to Chris after John Ward passed away. And, Chris, I got to say, you're an underrated mimic as well. I've heard a lot of people try to imitate John Ward and John Majors, but you've got some twists to it.
Yeah,
where
it's not bad.
You've captured this really, really well for radio purposes. I know you're a writer. You're first and foremost a writer, but I got to give you a lot of props there.
Well, I can't do either justice, Coach Majors or John Ward. Certainly not John Ward. His voice is iconic. You know, there's just some voices really none of us should try to do. You know, Larry Munson, John Ward, Caleb Ledford, those radio voices that were from the golden era of radio when I grew up. But, you know, I probably, and well, I know those will go probably to it. I'm not doing any of them justice in trying to mimic them.
So, Chris, you talked about the family tree, and, you know, you have such a great grasp of the history here. I was a student at Vanderbilt. I can remember, I think I went to Vanderbilt's football game the day that Coach Majors had the issue and Coach Fulmer came in, and then the whole thing spiraled from there. So the details for me are sketchy on how it got so adversarial between, you know, two legends in Tennessee coaching history. So I've always kind of hoped, you know, from where I sit, just, you know, way far away, that those two would be able to mend the fence a little bit. And I guess it didn't happen that much. And so, you know, I go back to that time and I'm thinking, you know, how did it get so adversarial to where they could never, you know, even years and decades later, come around a little bit? So what's your best answer to that?
Yeah, well, you know, you go back to that 92 season, and really Coach Majors, I think Vanderbilt was the last game he coached, but I think the announcement that he was out was a few weeks earlier, a week earlier, at I think Memphis, actually. And I'll never forget that press conference. You see him there with his glasses on reading a statement. You know, it's let me start by saying this. I mean, for most of my lifetime, the two faces of Tennessee football were John Majors and Philip Fulmer. Really for 35 years,
yeah.
They were two head coaches of that program. And I think I don't care what side of the fence you're on or how you look at it or what version of the story, because there's a lot of different versions of that story. I don't care where you are in that. It's a sad situation because you got two guys that have meant in their own way so much to that university and that football program. And you're right, there was no relationship toward the end, and there's, you know, there's blame to go around. And I know Coach Majors toward the end, you know, I knew better than to bring it up because I knew just how hurt, you know, it's a hurt that he never got over. You know, it's bitterness he never got over. I think probably, and I'd spoken to Coach Fulmer about it, and I think probably he would have been willing, you know, toward the end to try, you know. But he also knew where that was going to lead, and it just, you know, it is what it is. I mean, it's sad. I think anybody that's connected to the University of Tennessee in any way still looks back on that situation with sadness because, again, they both meant and do still mean so much to that university. But long story short, you know, Coach Majors was pushed out. You know, he had the heart bypass surgery and didn't start the 1992 season as coach because he's recovering. Coach Fulmer was coaching, and they got off to a great start. They beat Florida, they beat Georgia. And essentially what happened was, you know, Coach Majors came back really before his superiors knew he was going to come back to coach, and that didn't sit well with a lot of people. And the team sort of went in the tank after that, and there was a movement among the higher-ups to push him out, you know, and it was handled poorly. And I don't care, again, how you look at it, the whole thing was handled poorly for a guy that was as iconic and legendary. And there were times that, you know, there were a lot of things that happened to Coach Fulmer, Coach Majors didn't handle well. You know, when things like that happen, there's never one person or one version that's the gospel. It's the truth sort of somewhere in the middle usually. And again, I think you could bring 50 people on your show right now and ask them about what happened. You're probably going to get a little bit different version. I'm blessed in this, as I had a great relationship with Coach Majors. I continue to have a great relationship with Coach Fulmer. And I know, again, have been an alumnus of the university, how much they both mean to the University of Tennessee.
Here's another historical part of this that we talked with Jimmy about, and I'd be curious to know your perspective on it. You know, Tennessee had these really powerful teams in the early 70s, some really exciting teams. And then, of course, they fell on the hard times, and Coach Majors wins the national championship at Pittsburgh and then gets the job at Tennessee. But it took them a while to build it back to where they had some success. And one of the things that we were kind of kicking around was, in this day and age, with how impatient, you know, passionate fan bases tend to be, you know, and also factoring in the dynamic that you're coming back to coach your alma mater, which is always tough as well, is would they have had the patience today that they had back then with Coach Majors? Because Jimmy, I think, argued that he may have been fired before he ever saw the bounce back of the program.
There's no way he would have made it, because you're exactly right. I've talked to people about that, because he comes in 77. Now, listen, the program was in bad shape. You know, and the first thing that we probably need to preface before I answer that is, when Coach Fulmer took over the program, it was still a Taj Mahal. Okay, he had great talent. The program was in great shape. But when Coach Majors took it over, and that's not to diminish anything Coach Fulmer did, because he took that program to another level, and they won a national championship. I mean, Tennessee from 95 to 98, guys, was 45-5. How long do you think it'll be before we see Tennessee go 45-5 and win two SEC titles and a national title in a four-year stretch? I mean, think about that.
Not easy to match.
To another level. But Coach Majors found a program that was struggling and took it and rebuilt it. But it took him a while, and you're exactly right. And in today's era, with social media, with the pressure, the money being generated, I don't know that he would have been given – in fact, I doubt very seriously he would have been given the time. In 88, they started out 0-6. And he turned it around, and you can really make an argument that after they turned it around and won their last five, that was really the beginning of the resurgence of Tennessee football. You know, now they'd won the Sugar Bowl in 85, and that was a great year. I think still one of the most beloved teams in Tennessee football history. But to do what he did and keep that team together in 88, and then in 89 and 90, they won a share or the SEC title. I think we're over the next 3.5 seasons, we're 34-6-2. Again, in talking to some players that played then, Keith DeLong and some guys, that to me is the essence of who Coach Majors was, and really sort of propelled Tennessee on to the success it had in the 90s, and then Fulmer took it from there to another level. But, no, I think Jimmy's right. I don't know that in this day and age he would have gotten the time, you know, because they were really pretty average from 77 to when they broke through in 85 and won the Sugar Bowl. They were very average there for, what's that, 7 years, 8 years?
We're talking to Chris Lowe from ESPN and reminiscing on Johnny Majors and the Tennessee program. And even though he and Coach Fulmer never made up, they never worked things out, I know after Coach Fulmer left and Lane Kiffin took over and, of course, Derek Dooley, Butch Jones, you saw Coach Majors around the program more. How important was that to at least have that back in his life, that he was able to not necessarily make up with Philip Fulmer, but be back at Tennessee in some capacity?
Well, listen, Coach Majors never fell in love with his alma mater, Tennessee. Okay, that was never Tennessee. He would always tell you there were just a few people that he couldn't get past, a few people. I mean, even after Philip took over as AD, I would run into Coach Majors there in the complex from time to time. He'd go back to see people. You know, he went over to Durham and spent some time with Cutcliffe. Cutcliffe invited him over. You know, I think initially there was some, you know, that was an icy relationship too, but, you know, they were able to get past that. And I think it was a pretty emotional scene. Cutcliffe asked him to speak to his team. But he came back. Coach Majors came back. Lane was great about bringing him back. You know, several of those coaches afterward. And there was always an open door for him to come back when Phillip took over as AD as well. And you would see him over there. He never lost his love or his passion for the University of Tennessee. I mean, his whole family was so ingrained, not only in that university, but in that state. There were just a few people that he felt like, rightfully or wrongfully so, that were part of, you know, the coup to push him out, and he just never could get past that.
I'll ask you the same question that I asked Jimmy when we had him on last week. I'm about to turn 33 years old, so I obviously don't remember some of the things that you've been talking about, and most of them were before my time. I know the history of the program, but a lot of what I witness was under Philip Fulmer. So if there's one thing you could tell somebody, you know, my age or my era about John Majors that they absolutely need to know, what would it be?
The pride that he carried with him from being a Tennessean. You know, again, just the, you know, his dad, Shirley, coaching at the University of the South, his brothers playing there, and just how proud he was to be from that state and to represent where the Orange as a player, as a coach. We could sit here right now, and I've had this conversation with him over many lunches. There are very few people in college football who are as impactful at their college as both a player and coach is John Majors, and he was immensely proud of that.
Then I'll- Chris, last thing. What do you think what's happened with Mike Norvell? Let's get one college football in there on the way out. With what happened at Florida State with Mike Norvell, Dabo Swinney has been all over ESPN today with what happened with his coach and just these players speaking out and just the times that we're in right now. How much do you think that is going to change the dynamic between the coach and the student-athlete relationship, or will it?
I think we'd already started to see that. You know, the players are more empowered than they've ever been. They understand that they realize that they know their voices are going to be heard more than ever. And I think coaches now are seeing, and I think a lot of coaches already realize this, that they better be as good a listener and better hear their players better than they ever have before. And I'm talking about players from all backgrounds and all cultures, okay? I think that's the thing that we've seen more than ever over the last couple of weeks. But I think we're already moving in that direction when you get back to the, you know, the name, image, likeness. And for so long, you know, players felt like they didn't have a voice. I think you're going to see that continue to change. And, you hear coaches talking right now. I think the best thing coaches can do right now, all coaches, you mentioned a couple in particular, but all coaches, the best thing they can do is sit down and listen and talk to their players and see what they can do to help their players feel like, no matter who they are or where they're from, that they have a voice and they're truly a part of that university and the program.
Yep. Good stuff as always. You and the family continue to be safe, and we love our talks with you, and we'll talk to you down the road. Thanks for doing this.
All right, guys. Thanks for having me. Take care.
All right. That is Chris Lowe from ESPN. Does a fine job of covering college football for them, and he's been doing it for a long time. Does a really good work. We'll come back. More of Darren Donick and Chase on the other side. ESPN 102.5 The Game.
At Market District, we believe in the power of great taste, like juicy heirloom tomatoes, cheesy house-made pizza, and fresh artisan-made bread. From produce to meats to chef-made meals, discover great taste at Market District.
Hey, it is Ryan Seacrest here. If you love great games and a little extra excitement to your day, I got something fun for you. Chumba Casino and I have teamed up to create an exclusive online social casino game. It's called Ryan Seacrest 10K Ways. It's fun and free to play, just like all your favorites from Chumba Casino. And every spin brings 10,000 ways to keep the good times going. Check it out and play for free today at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.